The Asian Classics Institute presents What the Buddha Really Meant with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in November of 1998. This is the beginning of Class 4.
Unfortunately, you had a class off, so you probably forgot everything. So did I. So we'll go over everything again, okay? Basically, this whole problem started. The Buddha taught the Dharma three times, three turnings of the wheel, three great themes in his teaching throughout his life. In the first great turning of the wheel, he talked about all the different ways of dividing up yourself. And we're going to come back to that later tonight. All the different ways to divide a human being. If you ever read the Abhidhammakosha, that's the first chapter. If you ever study the Heart Sutra, that's the main theme of the Heart Sutra. You go through all the parts of a person and thereby learn more about the person. So in the first turning of the wheel, Lord Buddha is mainly going through the different parts of a person or the different parts of the universe, and then he sort of says that everything does have some sort of existence by definition. When he gets to the second turning of the wheel, he gets very radical and he says nothing has any nature of its own. And then the third turning of the wheel is triggered by a confused bodhisattva named Dundanyandapak, who comes up to Lord Buddha and says, did you mean what you said in the second turning of the wheel? Which is also by implication to ask, did you mean what you said in the first turning of the wheel? And which are we to take literally and which are we to take figuratively? And Lord Buddha splits the question, okay? Like any good philosopher. He says, well, sometimes I was and sometimes I wasn't. You know what I mean? So in the second turning of the wheel, when I said nothing had any nature of its own, with some things I was being literal, and with other things I wasn't being literal. And if you want to understand it more easily, you can divide all the stuff in the world into three groups. Sometimes they're called the three attributes of the mind-only school. And you can understand it that way. When I said nothing had a nature, I meant three different things. The first thing I meant was that nothing had a nature of existing by definition, meaning from its own side, through its own unique way of being. And in that case, I was talking about imaginary things, okay? Like a flower that you imagine growing in midair, like a two-headed 30-foot purple elephant rampaging through this room right now, like a giant pumpkin squashing the Twin Towers, or like the idea of Roy, okay? All right? Those are all just ideas. Those are all just your imagination. Some of them refer to things that exist. He's sitting over there. Some of the things refer to things that don't exist. It's not squashing the Twin Towers, okay? But in either case, they don't exist from their own side through their own unique way of being, because they are just things you make up in your mind. And that's the first thing I meant when I said nothing had any nature. Second thing I meant was that nothing had any nature of growing, meaning those things in the world which have causes don't grow by themselves. And the most important example of the things in the world that have causes and don't grow by themselves is what? How about your death and your aging, okay? That's the main one, okay? The fact that you're getting older, the fact that you're going to die, or you may die if you don't practice well, is that the main point is to say that those aren't causeless. They do have a cause. There's a reason why you're getting old. There's a reason why you're going to die if you die, which I hope you don't die. And there's a reason why that happens, and you can stop it. Okay, so that was the second thing I meant, was that none of the changing things around you, the dependent things, has any nature of growing by itself without its causes and conditions. Okay, that's the second one. The third thing I meant when I said things didn't have any nature was that certain things are not ultimate in various ways. And in that case, I was referring to emptiness itself. Okay, emptiness itself being, you can define it positively as the thing that you see that purifies your mental afflictions permanently, eventually, after you see it. Or you can define it negatively as the fact that nothing in the world exists by itself. Okay? You can define it either way. But either way, that's what I meant in the third meaning when I said nothing had any nature. Okay? Then the Buddha goes on to tell Dinayanapak, that Bodhisattva, I can give you now three special words. You can refer to these three things as. The first one is what? Kuntak. Okay, say kuntak. Kuntak. Kuntak means imaginary stuff, imaginary things. Okay? Sometimes they refer to things that exist, like Roy. Sometimes they refer to things that don't exist, like self-existent things. Okay? The gakcha. Okay? What's the second one? Shenwang, meaning dependent things, things that have causes. Okay? And the third one? Yongdu, being the mind-only school's code word for emptiness. Okay? Ooh, not so bad. You remember more than I do. Okay, so those are those three. Now, the Buddha goes through explaining that, and then he goes through explaining the other four radical statements he made. Nothing starts, nothing stops, everything's peace, everything's nirvana. And he goes through, he explains all those. But in each case, he's using those three categories. In each case, he's answering through those three categories, okay, to the Bodhisattva. Now the Bodhisattva asks a very natural question, which is, what are these three categories? Where did you come up with that? Why did you come up with that? Why didn't you say that in the first place? Okay? Why in the second turn of the wheel, why did you say nothing exists, nothing has any nature of its own? Why didn't you, in the second turn of the wheel, why didn't you bring up these three things? Okay? And why are you bringing them up now? And what do they mean? They're kind of weird categories. They don't seem to connect much. You know, oh, three categories of all existing things. Things you make up in your mind, things that change, and emptiness. I mean, who would ever come up with that? You see, how many people in this room would come up with that on their own? You see what I mean? You know, let's divide all three things. Let's divide all reality into those three things. So the Bodhisattva is like, how did you come up with that? And how are we supposed to know you meant that? You know, these three things don't seem connected at all, and they just seem to be three things that you just wanted to talk about or something, but you didn't mention this the second time you turned the wheel. Now you're mentioning all this stuff. Okay, how do you come up with these three? And what did these three mean? Okay. And why did you come up with these three? And is there some kind of relationship between these three? Is there some point to dividing these things, all things, into these three? Is there some kind of secret message here that you're not telling us? So Lord Buddha in the sutra, which is what sutra? The sutra that the mind-only school loves to quote to prove that they're right when they say the Buddha didn't mean what he said in the second turn of the wheel, and he did mean what he said in the third turn of the wheel. Because in the third turn of the wheel, he said, some of what I said in the second turn of the wheel was right, and some of what I said in the second turn of the wheel, you have to interpret. Okay, so they like that sutra. It's called the Sutra of the True Intent of the Sutras, right? It's the commentary on the true intent of the sutras. Commentary by whom? A later Indian pundit? No, I mean, all the commentaries are written by later Indian pundits, except this one. This one is written by Lord Buddha. This is Lord Buddha explaining to the Bodhisattva what he meant in all his other teachings. Okay, so They love to quote this sutra because this sutra seems to support the mind-only school. Okay, so then they're going to quote this sutra, and now here comes the next question. You know, Dindamyandapak says, "Well, what do you mean when you say kuntang? Okay, what do you mean when you say an imaginary thing? Are there any like typical qualities of imaginary things that we should know about?" And Buddha says, "Yeah, there are." And being a good galupa, he says three. Okay, he makes a he makes categories. Okay, he divides it into three categories. In the sutra, here's the first one. By the way, you got to do your homework, okay? If you don't do your homework, the whole thing is useless. I taught for 15 years in New York, nobody learned anything. You know, I had to start all over again. Okay, you got to do your homework, okay? Please. I don't care if you missed them already, start now. Okay, you won't learn anything if you don't do your homework, okay? It'll be some fuzzy thing in 2 weeks. In 3 weeks, it'll probably be Vaibhashika. In 4 weeks, it'll be some Hindu thing, you know? Okay. All right? Really? Okay, please. Just write something. Thomas Olson gives everybody 100. I heard that. Okay. Pilar's even easier. Okay. Say number. Tope. Chuyu. Number. Tope. Chuyu. Three qualities of kuntaks, okay? Three qualities of imaginary things. Oh, yeah, we can say that. No, we can't say that. Scratch that. Three qualities of dependent things. He starts out with dependent things. I'm sorry, okay? We now have three qualities of dependent things. Okay. Shenwangs, yeah. Three qualities of shenwangs, to make it easy. To say it more correctly, these are three qualities, shenwangs, that relate to kuntaks. You see what I mean? But you'll see why. So number topa means to construct something in your mind. Okay? Number topa means to construct something in your mind. Like, when you look at this pen, according to the mind-only school, you're doing two kinds of number topas. One, you're creating a mental image, or you're focusing on a mental image of pen, okay? It's very close to the idea of Junqi that we studied in Madhyamika, in Middle Way, but forget now Madhyamika right now, okay? So there is a mental image you have of this pen that you are doing. You're making some kind of mental picture of this pen. You are constructing a pen in your mind, and the thing you call pen. Okay. Remember the boy named Tashi? We'll go back to him later, okay? But you're constructing something. This was a black and white stick until you called it pen, and then you had a nice thing called pen in your mind, okay? And that's a number topa. Number topa means to make a construct in your mind, to build up a construct in your mind. The mind-only school says, by the way, that you never really see the pen, okay? You're constantly dealing with constructs. The pen itself is a very subtle, very hard to get at, very, very, very subtle thing, and you almost never get beyond the curtain of your own images, your own mental images, your own constructs. So number topa means construct. Chuyu means the arena in which the constructing state of mind is doing its thing. Okay? The arena in which the constructing state of mind is doing its thing. What is the arena here? It's the pen. Okay? And the constructing state of mind is playing around with that object and making up a thing called pen. Okay? So there is a very, very subtle thing there, out there. Okay? In this school, there is a very subtle object out there. And then your mind is playing around in that arena and making some creation of a pen. And most of the time, when you think you're seeing the pen or concentrating on the pen, you're actually dealing with your own mental image of the pen, your own construct of the pen. Okay? So they believe there is a pen out there, some very subtle thing, and that you almost never get to it through the veil of your own labels and names and constructs. Okay, so the first quality of changing things in the mind-only school, you know, the Bodhisattva asked Lord Buddha, what do you mean when you say Xianwang? What do you mean when you say Kunda? Lord Buddha says, you know, It's the thing that you're playing with when you make your constructs. It is the arena in which you invent your constructs. Okay? That's the first quality of what? A changing thing. Like a pen, like a chair, like you. Okay? That's the first quality of that. It's the arena in which you play when you make your constructs. Okay? This is mainly referring to the state of mind that makes constructs, right? Okay? The first quality of all changing things is that they are the playground in which your mind invents its constructs. Okay? Think of it like that. It's like Yankee Stadium. It's the place in which you do the baseball game. Okay? The pen is first of all that. A changing thing is first of all that. It's the thing you're... It's the arena in which you make your constructs, in which you invent your constructs, called pen. Okay? All right? Does that construct exist, by the way? Does it refer to an existing thing? Pen.
Yes.
Yeah. It's an imaginary thing. It's an invention of your mind, like pencil, or like children, or like that. See, those are constructs in your mind. You're making them up in your mind. There's nothing about those four particular limbs and that particular round head, which is any more puntok than anybody else. You are labeling it, okay? You are making it up. You are inventing it. You are making a construct, okay, with your mind. Okay? Yeah? John says, when I say arena, am I referring to external matter or the process of your mind? I'm referring to, you can say external matter, you can say an external thing. Now in this school, do you accept external things? That's a whole nother story, we'll talk about it later, okay? But I'm talking about mainly changing things out there, which you call pen, and then you get hung up on the idea of pen, and you never quite reach the pen itself, okay? You are, that is the place in which you are doing your thing with your imagination. How's that? You are inventing pen out there with your mind, okay? Yeah. Calling it, are you calling it sense data?
No, not
in this school. Okay? We don't, you know, in the middleway school we might say you are looking at certain sense data, blackness and whiteness and cylindricalness, and you are labeling it or you're thinking of it a certain way. That's middleway school. Close the door. Okay? In this school there is a real pen out there that exists from its own side, through its own unique way of being. But you are, it's somehow veiled all the time by your thoughts about it, by your constructs about it, okay? And that's the first quality of all changing things, okay? Is that they are the arena in which you, they are the place where you do your thing with your imagination. Okay, that's the first quality. Number Dobichuyu means that. The arena in which you invent your constructs, okay? Yeah?
So if a dog saw that as a stick, that would just be the dog's construct. The way a human seeing it as a pen would be a human's construct, it wouldn't affect the substance, the pen itself.
Mark is flirting with a middleway school thing, okay? You poor guys have had all that middleway stuff. You know, what does a dog see? Does it, if this has penness from its own side, if it has from its own side some unique way of being as a pen, then wouldn't a dog see it as a pen? And how does it work in this school, right? I think in this school you'd have to say that the dog is seeing it as a pen, okay? Or that they are, that they're having their own construct about it. But they would say it has penness from its own side, okay, in this school. I think in this school you'd have to say that, yeah. Do they accept the idea of functionality?
Functionality, yeah. Functionality is part of it being by definition.
Yeah, and in fact in this school, this is the highest, she said, do they accept the functionality? And this school is one of the schools that says functionality is inherent in the thing. Okay, this is the highest school that says functionality is inherent in the thing itself. Okay, that's a difficult question. Long story. We don't want to open that. Okay, here's the second quality of a Shenwan. Say kuntape, seniki, ne, kuntape, seniki, ne. Okay, before I go on, I'm gonna go back to the boy named Dashi, okay? And I'll make it a little easier for you, okay? So remember we gave this example, Geshe Thubten Rinchen's famous example of the boy named Dashi. There's a Tibetan father and his pregnant wife, he's not a father yet. Anyway, a man and his pregnant wife, and they are having their first baby, and she gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then finally one day she gives birth to this baby boy, and it's just a lump of flesh. Okay, it's two arms, two legs, four limbs, a head, a torso, and it makes noise and it cries, and this is a baby boy. Okay, and it's just a baby boy. The day that the thing is born, the day that the thing comes out, it's just a baby boy. Okay, a day later or 2 days later, mommy and daddy talk it over and they decide to call the boy Tashi, okay, like Tashi Delay, okay? And it means goodness or good luck or something like that, auspiciousness. And then they label the boy Tashi and they start thinking about him as Tashi, okay? And then there comes about this construct, this imaginary thing called Tashi the boy named Tashi, okay? Is there a baby boy there? Yes. From its own side? Yes. Does the concept Tashi exist from its own side in the way the boy does? No. Prove it. Because the moment he pops out, not everybody goes, "Hey, Tashi's here." Okay? All right? That proves that's a construct. That proves it does not have its own unique way of being from its own side, which is a definition of existing by definition in this school. Okay? If Tashi the boy existed by definition, if the boy named Tashi existed by definition, then he would exist from his own side. And the minute he popped out of his mom's womb, everybody would say, "Oh, Tashi's here." Okay? But they didn't say Tashi's here because that's a construct. That's an imaginary thing. A day later, they start to think of him as Tashi the boy. And the thing called Tashi the boy is in everybody's mind. All there is out there is a baby. Okay? Tashi the boy is a construct that goes on existing for his whole life. And people forget that it was a construct, but it is a construct. And the fact that not everybody said, "Oh, here's Tashi the boy," the minute he popped out, is proof that it's a construct in this school. Because constructs are the only one of those three attributes that don't exist from their own side. Okay? They don't exist from their own side. The only one is constructs. Okay? So, Tashi the boy. What corresponds here to the constructing state of mind? The labeling state of mind. What's the example in this? What's this part of this example that represents the constructing state of mind? The mind that makes up all this stuff. It's mom and dad. Okay? It's mom and dad because they give the label. They give the name. Okay? So think of mom and dad as the state of mind which makes up kuntaks. Okay? The kuntaking state of mind. Okay? Think of mom and dad as the kuntaking state of mind. Think of the boy named Tashi as the Shenwang. It's that pen out there. Okay? And then the kuntak is what? The boy named Tashi, which is only existing in people's minds. Okay? It's a construct. Okay? Got it? So if you get it straight with that example, then you'll be okay later. You've got to do it again. Okay? Constructing state of mind, the mind that's inventing the kuntaks, the mind that's putting kuntaks on all those shenwangs, is daddy and mom and dad. Okay? And then out here is the boy that was born, that lump of flesh. Okay? And then between them, standing somehow between them, are the kuntaks, meaning later you begin to mistake them for the boy named Tashi. It's just an idea. If that thing had been between you and the baby the first day, everyone would have said, "Oh, here's Tashi, came out." But it wasn't there. It came later. It came a day or two later. Okay? So there's a state of mind that gives the thing the name or the label. Then there's the thing that gets the name, which is the Shenwang. And then there's the thing that's constructed, which is the kuntak, lying between the baby and mom and dad. It's just an idea lying between those two. Got it? Okay? So there's a kuntak, here's a Shenwang, and here's a state of mind called mom and dad, which is giving the, which is inventing the kuntaks. Okay, got it? Not too many nods there. All right. So when you say, how do we describe the baby? You see, the baby represents what? Shenwangs, changing things. How do we describe the baby? Well, first of all, he's the thing that they put their trip on. Okay? He's the poor thing. He's like a dartboard. He's the dartboard upon which they shoot their darts. Okay? That's his first quality. Okay, this is emphasizing, by the way, number one is emphasizing that he's the seeing that their minds are laying the trips on. So it's almost emphasizing more their state of mind. If you think about Namba Tope Chuyu, the arena in which all these things, these labels are being put, you have to think of mom and dad. Okay, it emphasizes more mom and dad laying this trip on that poor baby. Okay, yeah. These are three qualities of the baby.
The first one.
Yeah, all three.
Is it mom and dad's state of mind, or is it the
baby? It's the baby. Now get it, okay? This is the tough part. Tonight, you are going to discover that the three attributes of the mind-only school stand like a tripod, and they support each other. That's the whole point of what we're doing tonight, okay? The Bodhisattva asked what? Hey, where'd you come up with these three things? They don't have any connection at all. And then by the time you get done with this class tonight, and by the time Lord Buddha gets done with his answer to the Bodhisattva, you find out that each one is needed for each of the others. They stand like a tripod. They support each other. Okay. So when the Bodhisattva asks, what's a Shenwang? Buddha, the first thing Buddha says is, oh, it's that thing that you aim your kuntaks towards. He's defining changing things by describing how imaginary things relate to them. And that's how he's going to do the whole answer. And he's going to prove to the Bodhisattva that he's not just random three groups he came up with. They define each other in a very, very beautiful way. Okay? And that's why he brought up these three things. Okay? The imaginary things, the changing things, and the emptiness, all tied together in this beautiful, beautiful way. Okay? That's going to be the point of the thing tonight. Okay? So, Lord Buddha says, oh, first thing you want to know about Shenwangs? They're what? The constructs are aimed at. When you shoot a construct, that's what they're aimed at. Okay? Like a dart. Okay? Now, number two, say kuntape. Senyiki. Ne. Kuntape means kuntaks. Okay? Imaginary things. Senyi means, in this case, that attribute of the mind-only school. The group called kuntaks. Okay? Kuntape senyi means the group called kuntaks. Name means the place where they get parked. Name means place. Okay? The place where you park your kuntaks. The place where kuntaks stay. This is talking what? After the dart has been thrown and the dart is already stuck there. What's the dart? Let's call it the name Dushi. What's the dartboard? The poor kid that got the name Dushi. Okay? Alright? Okay? So now you're talking about it from the dartboard side. More than from the dart side. Okay, the first one was more from the dart side. Okay, how do you describe Shenwangs? How do you describe changing things? Well, those are the things we throw our ideas at, that we build our constructs around.
So then it has become independent, the dart, that then becomes almost independent.
Well, yeah, people, she said, does the dart become independent? My God, yes, that's the whole point of this whole lecture tonight. That's the whole point of talking about three different things. You start to think of it as independent. You start to think of Dushi as having some independent existence. He must have been Dushi forever. And I don't like him either. And he's unlikable too. Okay? From his own side. It's not my construct. Okay? And that's how all your suffering starts. That's going to be the punchline, okay? You're about 45 minutes ahead. Okay, yeah. Yeah, kuntaks don't change. Kuntaks are concepts. Kuntaks are concepts, like the sky is blue. Or sky. You see, in this school and in the logic schools, sky. The idea, sky. It doesn't get more or less sky. It's always sky. Okay? Like that. Okay. So now we're talking about kuntaka seniki name means the place where you put your kuntaks. Okay? We're still talking about the pen. Okay? In number one, we're talking about it as the object that we lay our kuntaks on. And now we're talking about it as the place where the kuntaks come to rest and park. Okay, but we're still talking about Shenwangs. Okay? Alright? This is how Lord Buddha is describing changing things. They are the things that you make up stuff about in your mind, like he's a bad person from his own side. And they are also the place that ends up getting labeled. Okay? And they're very close. Okay? Number one and number two are the same thing, just from different angle. One is the thing you throw the darts at. The other thing is the thing that gets hit by the darts. The darts are your imagination. The darts are your names and labels. He's a bad person. I don't like him. He's bad from his own side. Okay? So, from one point of view, the guy throwing the dart. From one point of view, the guy that gets hit by the dart. Okay? They're both referring to the baby. What's the dart? Dashi. What's the hand? Mom and dad. Naming him, labeling him, giving him a label. Okay? And at some point, everybody forgets that they made it up, and he's Dashi from his own side. And that's ignorance that's holding that. Okay? Is that a kuntak? Tashi who exists from his own side? Tashi who was Dashi from the beginning. Tashi who must be Dashi. Does that exist? Does that exist? No. Is it a kuntak? Yeah. Okay? And that's the kuntak that gives you all your trouble. In this school, if you could realize that, you wouldn't have ignorance anymore and the wheel of life would ground to a halt because 1 o'clock got stopped. What is 1 o'clock? Ignorance. Okay? It's not realizing that you're making up Dashi, and you're making up bad guy, and you're making them up, and then they become natural to you. They become as if they always existed like that. Okay? And that's how you get your trouble. So that's very beautiful, you see. We're getting Gakja here. We're getting the thing that emptiness is empty of, but it's a little bit early, okay? Number 3. Say, Dujeki. Sema. Dujeki. Sema. Duje means factor, okay? In Sanskrit it's samskara. People say compositional, whatchamajiggies, I don't know. Anyway, it just means anything that causes another thing. Duje means anything that causes another thing. A factor. Okay? Anything that brings about something else is called a duje. Duje ki sema means the characteristics of a factor, okay? Duje ki sema means the characteristics of a factor. This is another quality of changing things. What? They exhibit the quality of making other things happen. Okay? That's the third quality of a changing thing. They exhibit the quality of making other things happen. Okay? And of being caused themselves. Okay? That's the implication of that. So Lord Buddha is explaining what it means to be a changing thing. What does he say? Wouldn't it be easy if he just said, oh, hey, Dundam Yanda Pak, oh, Bodhisattva, you want to know what I mean when I say changing thing? Oh, it's anything that has a cause. Anything that has a factor. I mean, why didn't he just say that? What did he answer? Oh, it's those things you think about as a pen. And it's those things that get thought about as pens. And it's those things that do something like a pen. Okay? I wish he'd given an easier answer, right? Okay? Those are the three characteristics we just finished. Okay, I'll say it again. Good old Bodhisattva Dunayana Pa comes up and says, can you tell me what you mean by changing thing? He says, I mean three things when I say changing thing. It's the thing that you're imagining is a changing thing. It's the thing that gets imagined as a changing thing. And it's the thing that changes. Okay? Now why did he go through the first two? Okay? Why did he go through that? What's the point? Okay? I'll say it again, one more time. Okay. The Bodhisattva comes up to Buddha and says, secretary of the wheel, you said nothing had any nature of its own, right? He says, yeah, that's what I said. Did you mean it when you said that? He says, no. Well, what were you talking about? Oh, three different things, three different natures they don't have. That's all I meant. I didn't mean it literally. I mean, of course things have natures, you know. And then the Bodhisattva says, well, how do you get these three natures? What are you talking about? Three different groups or three different attributes of things. He says, oh, what's the first one you want to ask about? He says, tell me about Shenwangs. What do you mean when you say dependent things or changing things? It would be so easy if Lord Buddha would just say what? Things that change. Things that have causes. Things that cause other things. That's a changing thing. But he doesn't answer that way. How does he answer? The things you imagine as changing things. The things that get imagined by you as a changing thing. And the things that change. Okay? Now why does he go through those first two? Okay? I mean, that's the big question tonight, right? Why does he confuse us and the Bodhisattva? You know, why is he going into all that? He wants you to think about how these things are constructs. Okay? He's trying to force you to think about how changing things are constructs of your own mind. Okay? He could have said, oh, changing things is things that change. But he didn't. He said, changing things are things you think about as changing things. They're things that get thought about as changing things. And there are things that change. Okay? Why did he do that? He's trying to get you into understanding that a lot of this you make up in your own mind. Okay? He's trying to get you to understand that the boy named Tashi wasn't Tashi from the beginning, and the pen wasn't a pen from the beginning. Okay? You are creating a thing called pen. You have an idea called pen that's standing like a curtain between you and the pen. And you get mixed up looking at your idea of the pen and mistake it for the pen. There is a pen out there. There is a boy out there. And there is a Tashi, but Tashi is an idea between you and the boy. And pen is an idea between you and the pen. And you're never really seeing the pen, and you're never really seeing Tashi. All you're seeing is a baby that you're thinking of as Tashi. Okay? And you've got to get used to that. There ain't no Tashi from his own side. There ain't no Tashi that exists by definition. What's that got to do with my enlightenment? What's that got to do with me not dying? Okay? That's a big question you should always ask. I mean, you hear some Buddhist lecture somewhere, you got to ask the guy or the girl, okay? What's that got to do with me not dying? Okay? Why do I have to know that? Who cares? Okay? It's very important because what? You will think about other people as if they existed by definition and that they're not constructs of your own mind. So what's the problem with that? An apple will taste the same whether I'm constructing it or not, right? It is a problem there. Because you'll begin to think that it's good or bad from its own side, by definition, and not something that your mind is creating. Okay? You gotta get used to that. That's why Lord Buddha, when the Bodhisattva asks him what's some changing thing mean, he says, things you think about as changing things, and things that get thought about by you as a changing thing. Okay? You have to appreciate that. Now, yeah. She said, when you're born and before you know things about things, before you know how to name things, then how do you see things and how do you know about them? Say, Dajangi Kebu. Say, Dajang Kikebu. Dajangi Kebu. Very, very, very unique expression in this school and in the logic school. Da means the word for something. It's an ancient word for a word. Okay? Da means the word for something. Okay? Like pen. Da means, da, pen is one kind of da or expression or word. Jang means the person who knows it. Da jang gikebu means the person who knows the name for the thing. Okay? Da jang gikebu means the person who knows the name for a thing. So when you're first born, and when you first come out of your mom's womb, then technically you don't know the names for things yet, and you're not a da jang gikebu. Okay? So what Genevieve is asking is, before you're a Dajangi Gebu, how do you think of things? How do you know things? How do you perceptualize things? Remember that we said that perceptualization takes place in two ways. What were they? Labeling takes place in two ways. One is to name it that thing, and one is to think of it as that thing. Okay? So the thinking is there already. Okay? That's from your past life. You're already conceptualizing it as a discrete object. From your past life. You don't know the name for it yet. Don't forget that kuntaking, okay? Making kuntaks comes in two flavors. One is giving it its proper name, Dajangi Gebu. And only Dajangi Gebus can do that. Okay? So by the time you're like five, you're a Dajangi Gebu. I don't know. Ask. Kirin's not a Dajangi Gebu, right? Everything is da. Even mom is da, okay? He's not a Dajangi Gebu yet. But later on you become a Dajangi Kepa. But even before that, you were perceptualizing things in a certain way. You know, you didn't maybe perceive it perfectly as a pen, but you have a strong predilection for perceiving it as a pen. And that's what makes you perceive it as a pen so quickly. It's not that you're like smarter than animals. Okay? It's not like you're really smart and you get it and they never get it. You've got millions of years of thinking about it as a pen. Millions of years. You're just coming back to what you always knew. Okay? And an animal, having collected really lousy karma, doesn't have that memory so recently, and it can't recognize it. It does never cognize it as that, and it goes on thinking that it's something to chew forever. We had this question to Geshe Thubten Rinpoche: is anything in the world new? He said, no. The reason Mozart played piano at a certain age is that he was just remembering something, you know, that he knew for millions of years. You know. The reason that you see all the things around you in the way that you see it is that you've been in this show 1,000,000,000 times. And that's why, and some people pick it up faster and some people pick it up slower, but you have all the seeds in your mind to see the world the way you see it. And now to change it and to move up to another level, especially a tantric level, is a big job and very difficult. But it's much easier if you understand how you're making up the names for everything. That's the clue. That's the perfection of wisdom. You see? If somebody says, do you realize that you're creating all this stuff yourself? Then you're eligible to reach Tantra. You see? You've got to go through the mind-only school stuff, or at least the middle way stuff, before you can really move up to a different level. Right now you are restricted to everything you remember from your past lives. And you are perceiving your world, you are inventing your world on the basis of seeds that have been there for thousands and thousands of years. You're not like smarter than animals, okay? You just saw this as a pen for so many thousands of times before that you recognize it again as a pen in this life pretty quick, you know, by the time you were 5. Okay, and animals are like a little bit behind you because they haven't thought of them that way for a few million lives, okay? Now in this life, to move up through the things you knew into new things and to see the world in a new way has to happen through the door of the perfection of wisdom, which is to understand how you are inventing pen. You know, you have to know Kuntak, you have to know Shenwang, and you have to know Yongdu before you can see this world in a new way and not die. Okay? You have to go through this exercise. It's very cool. That's knowledge. That's the perfection of wisdom. Making that leap from what you knew in your past lives and then what you are capable of being, which is a tantric deity, requires the perfection of wisdom. You have to know what you're doing with the objects around you before you can make that leap. And that's why you come to these classes, okay? And that's why the Buddha taught those three things, Kuntaks, Shenwangs, and Yongdrups, okay? Yeah.
So I just want to get this straight on.
Yeah.
Now, by the time, like, you even get to the idea of, like, Tashi, or you begin to throw that Tashi dart, yeah. Tashi is already full of darts. Right?
Yeah.
Starting with...
No, there is no Tashi yet, sorry.
Right.
No, you caught me.
Starting with, like, the inherited tendency to discreetly objectify.
Yeah.
And then building everything on top of that, Tashi's already, like, built, like, darts everywhere, and then the Tashi dart.
Yeah.
So it's not, like, the Tashi that prevents you just from seeing Tashi. It's the Tashi dart and all the other darts that go all the way back. So even when we're throwing it at Tashi, the real Tashi, or not even real Tashi, like, that ineffable Tashiness or something, is, like,
He's saying, like, isn't Tashi full of darts even before you throw the Tashi dart? Well, first of all, you can't say Tashi's full of darts because he's not Tashi yet, okay? He's just a boy, right? Until you throw the Tashi dart. But didn't you throw a lot of boy darts just to think of him as a boy? You know, in this school you say, no. The boy is a Shenwang. Boy exists from its own side. Boy has its own identity. Boy would be boy in all situations. Boy is emanating boyness from its own side. Boy has its own boyness. Oh yeah, in this school. Shenwangs are Rangi, Tseni, Ki, Drupa. They exist by definition. What does that mean? They exist from their own side. In this school, you gotta go down, you know, you're used to high school. Go back to third grade. Go back to the mind-only school way of thinking of things. There is a pen out there. It does have its own existence from its own side. It does have penance from its own side. Okay? You gotta use the boy exists from his own side. The dashi doesn't. There's a big difference in this school. Why? Boy is a Shenwang. Dashi is a Kuntak. Kuntaks don't come from their own side. They get made up in your head. Shenwangs exist out there from their own side. They have their own real existence. The boy is not full of darts. The boy has his own discrete, unique identity from his own side. And it's not something I made up my mind. Dashi's different. Dashi's something I made up my mind. You guys are spoiled by Madhyamika.
You got middle way spoiled, okay? You're thinking of everything as being good, as being labeled, right? Forget it. In this school, Shanwangs are different, right? Why? They are Rangitani Kidupa. They exist by definition from their own side. Then later you think of them as good pen, bad pen, whatever you want, okay? Or you name it Tashi, or you name it what? Vis-a-vis, fine point, overhead projector pen, you know? Okay? But there is a pen out there. It does exist out there. I may be interpreting it a certain way. I may be calling it a certain thing. But there does exist a pen out there. Don't you really think that in your own heart about everything around you? You are mind-only school. Forget it. Okay? You believe that. And it gives you all your suffering. Okay? You know, you're not studying mind-only school as some philosophical bullshit, you know? You're studying mind-only school because you really believe it. And we're trying to overcome your belief in that. Okay? There is not a pen out there on its own that you think of as a good pen or a bad pen, right? When I always give the example in a class about the boss that comes in and I see him, as he yells at me for being a bad employee and I get hurt and the guy next to me is happy because I'm getting in trouble and he doesn't like me. And so I'm interpreting the boss as bad and he's interpreting the boss as good. And then there was this lady in Australia who heard this whole lecture, and the next morning she demanded an interview and she came. This is Nick Rebush's mother, okay? And she says, she travels all the way to the center in where is it? Melbourne? To ask me this one question, you know? Isn't the boss also a creation? Isn't the boss also an interpretation? I said, you know, like one person out of 1,000 gets it, and she gets it right away. Right away, she's asking me this question. I said, you're right. But we have to talk mind only when you talk to a large group of people in Melbourne, Australia. You can't say, yeah, and by the way, the boss also doesn't exist. Okay? You can't say that. People freak out. You just have to say, well, you know, your idea of the boss is good or your idea of the boss is bad is your karma, your karmic projection. But to go and say that the boss himself is your karmic projection, that's too much. But she got it right away. It's really cool. She would, right? If you know Nick, okay. Yeah. Yeah. In this school, one flavor, the main flavor of ignorance, there's a couple of flavors of ignorance, like 31 flavors, right? But in this school, the main one is to think that Tashi gets the name Tashi by definition. Okay? The Tashi is the thing we call Tashi naturally, by definition. He couldn't have been John Doe. Must have been Tashi from his own side. Okay? Meaning, the things you like and the things you don't like must come from their own side that way. Okay? And it's not your fault. And you should be angry at them. Or you should chase them, even at the expense of other people. Okay? That's the whole way it starts. Okay. Those are the three qualities of changing things. I'm going to state the next homework question. Yeah, I'll state the next two. And then I'll give you a break, okay? This question says, okay, got this? In explanations of the process of making constructs that follow from the sutra references we just mentioned, which is those three things, okay? When we talk about those three things, a distinction is made between the dependent thing that is the object of the constructing state of mind, the constructing state of mind itself, and the construct that, quote, lies between them. Okay? Explain these three as they occur in the example of the boy named Tashi. Okay? So what is the dependent thing that's the object of the construct? The blob, the baby boy. Okay? The unnamed baby boy that came out of the mother's womb. Okay? That's the Shenwang in this case. Okay? It's the thing that's going to receive the construct. Okay? It's the thing that's going to be thought about in a certain way. Shenwang, okay? What's the constructing state of mind itself in that example? Mom and dad, who are giving him a name, Tashi, a day later. Okay? That proves it's made up. Okay? And what is the construct that, quote, lies between them? The Tashi. Okay? Tashi. Great. Okay? That's the whole idea in this school. Get used to it. There is a thing out there, pen. I do think of it in a certain way, And then at some point I get confused between my own construct and the real pen out there. Something like that. Okay? Next question. In the illustration of the boy named Tashi, what is the indication that, according to the mind-only school, the construct does not exist by definition? What in this example of the boy named Tashi, what is the evidence that Tashi is a construct and doesn't exist by definition? What's the evidence of that? Yeah, that at the moment he popped out, everybody didn't say, "Ah, Tashi's here, finally," you know, okay? It came later. That's a sign that it doesn't exist by definition, because in this school, existing by definition means what? Suggested from its own side. It has its own real existence out there, penness from its own side. Okay. If the thing had Tashiness from his own side, the minute he popped out, everybody went and said, "Hey, Tashi's here." Okay. That's evidence that the idea Tashi, the kuntak called Tashi, does not exist by definition in this school. It does not exist from its own side in this school. Okay. How many things in this school exist by definition? How many of those three groups exist by definition?
Two
of them. What? The Shenwangs and the Yongdrups. The emptinesses and the changing things exist by definition. Why? Because they exist from their own side. You don't have to make them up. But the Kuntaks, they don't exist by definition because you just make them up. Okay? In this school, that's the difference. Okay? In the Madhyamika school, how many things exist by definition?
None.
Okay? And do you have to split things into three to explain it? No. Okay? No. You don't have to reinterpret the secretary of the wheel. That's where the Buddha told the real thing. Okay? Then why did he go on and teach number three? Why did he teach wheel number three? Because some people were freaking out, and he said, okay, they're going to, you know, go become Jehovah's Witnesses or something, you know. So he said, I better make up something quick. I just meant that, you know, I was just talking about three different things, you know, and well, I didn't mean to say everything didn't exist, right? Okay? He's just trying to keep him in the fold, you know. He's trying to say, look, don't worry, don't get nervous. I didn't really mean it when I said nothing existed or nothing had any nature of its own. Okay? He interpreted it for them. Okay? All right. Okay, so take a, yeah. You mean if some people in this room saw a certain person in a special way, would that be a kuntak? In this school, she asked an interesting question, okay? Suppose that some people in this room collect some very extraordinary karma and begin to see somebody else in this room as a holy being, as a tantric deity, okay? And then other people in this room don't have that kind of karma, and they don't see him that way. They look like a normal person. Who's right? Both. Okay, you got it. In Madhyamika, they're both right. Okay, in mind only, that's impossible. Somebody has to be right, and somebody has to be wrong, because angels are, tantric deities are, shenwangs. They are changing things. They are people. Okay. You either is from your own side or you is not from your own side. Okay? So one of those people is having a problem. And don't you think that way. You see? And don't you yourself think that way. You know? On days when you can't see people that way. You know? Don't you yourself believe that. Buddha's trying to point out that you are mind-only. You know, you giggle at the mind-only school, but you is mind-only. You know what I mean? And you believe that. You believe that this person is bad from their own side. You believe that this one person in your life could never be a tantric angel. Impossible. They're just too irritating. You know, it can't be from my side. It can't be a perceptual thing. They have to be irritating from their own side. Maybe all those other people possible. But this one person, no, impossible. You know, don't you believe that? Aren't you mind-only school with regard to certain people who irritate you? Okay? That's the whole point of this class. All right, take a break, and then we'll do more. Okay. And we, what do you call it? We blackmailed him into giving us protection cords. Okay, so what do you call it? Like we traded. Okay, we requested deep felt, heartfeltly, and Ellie took care of that. So you have to thank Ellie. Ellie will be passing them out after the class. Okay, so when you pick up your homework, these were blessed by His Holiness for members of our class. Okay. Distracting. Okay, that's one. This class is a very tiny abbreviation of a very heavy class taught by Geshe Thubten Rinchen in Sarah last month for practically the whole month. And you're welcome to get the audio tape if you want. It's in English. He speaks in Tibetan for like 5 minutes and then it's translated into English immediately. There's also a video of it, which we won't do unless there's enough people who want it. In other words, it costs like a lot of money to do the first copy, and then each other copy doesn't cost so much. So if you're interested in, I mean, the audio is pretty good, I think, but if for some reason you really want the video, talk to Aura. She's over there. Okay, so if it's the kind of thing, if we don't get 10 orders or something like that, we won't do it because it's really expensive, because it's 60 hours of digital videotape. But it's personally, I think it's the most important teaching on the mind-only school that I'm aware of that's ever been given in English. So he's just an extraordinary teacher. So, you know, if you're interested in that, talk about that. Last thing, we had a really good trip to Arizona the last 5 days. There's a rancher out there who has a very beautiful property near in the high desert, cool desert, in southern Arizona. It looks very much like Sarah Monastery's location in Tibet. And it looks pretty good. We had Winston was out there working very hard and some other people. And we had many, many meetings, many hours of meetings with these ranchers, basically, who by coincidence have been to Sarah in Tibet. Okay, that's a weird story. And so it looks really interesting. So I'll keep you up to date on that. And that will be a 3-year retreat site in starting in 2000 for a group of people. And then they'll pop. The rancher was even taking us around and showing us neat valleys where we could have teachings for 3 weeks at a time. So we'll probably twice a year during that 3 years we'll have 3-week intensive teachings in like this huge tent out in the meadows under the mountains. It's very beautiful. So keep you up to date on that. Not decided totally yet. Okay. So why does Lord Buddha, is it just random that he picks these three attributes, you know, Kundak, Shenwang, Yongdrup? Is it just random? Is he just, you know, we've talked about already today that who would think that up? I mean, you're sitting at your workplace, you know, it's about time to eat lunch, and then suddenly it occurs to you, you know, you can divide everything into Kundaks, Shenwangs, and Yongdrups. You know what I mean? It's not something that would normally occur to you, you know. And then it's not like you spend all day thinking about, oh, the pen is like a dartboard that I put my ascriptions on or my constructs on, and it's like something that receives my constructs. And by the way, it's also a changing thing. You don't go around thinking like that, okay? So why did Lord Buddha talk about that? Why did Lord Buddha make up these three categories of stuff? What's the point of talking about things in this way? Kundak, Shenwang, Yongdru. What's the point? What's he trying to teach us? And this is where you get into the interdependence of the three. Okay, they are like a tripod. Each one is defined by the other one. And it's a very, very beautiful thing. If you get what I'm about to say, then you'll understand the mind-only school very well. You have a big, big insight into the mind-only school. And the point is that each one of those three helps the other two to exist. And they are like three corners of a triangle. You see, I mean, think of it that way. Okay, and we'll go into it now. Why did Lord Buddha start talking about, you know, if somebody came up to Ellie Vanderpath, you know, Jigme Palmo said, Why do you talk about shenwangs? Why do you talk about dependent things? And her answer is out of left field. What do you call it? Oh, because they're the object that you imagine about. So why are you talking like that? Why don't you just say there are things that change, there are things that have causes, there are things that... You know, why do you describe changing things as, oh, those are the things that you lay your constructs on? You know, why does Lord Buddha talk like that when he's describing plain old changing stuff around us? He's trying to get you to think about guntaks, okay? So think of it as a triangle. And you're going to get really good at it. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it, okay? I think, you know, do kundaks apply to shenwangs? Do shenwangs apply to yongdup? Do yongdups apply to shenwangs? Do yongdups apply to kundaks? Do kundaks relate to shenwangs? The whole point is, yeah, they define each other, okay? The crux is here. The crux is here. Shenwangs, okay? The things around you, 99.99% of your experience is the changing things around you, okay? We start from there. These are the basis. This is why Lord Buddha, in responding about the three attributes to the Bodhisattva, brings up what? Shenwangs. Everything is from the point of view of shenwangs. Shenwangs is what gets called things. Okay? Shenwangs is the thing that receives the name of things. Shenwangs is the changing things. You want to know what those three are? Why does he go straight for shenwangs? Why doesn't he talk a little bit about kuntaks? Why doesn't he talk a little bit about yongdrups? Shenwangs are the basis of everything. Okay? Think of shenwangs as the basis of the whole conversation. Shenwangs, the things around you, okay, which are primarily kunjung denpa and dungya denpa, meaning what? Suffering and the truth of the source of suffering. Okay? 99.999% of the things around you are changing. And exactly that many are suffering. Okay? They are either mental affliction or caused by mental affliction, or about to give you new mental affliction. Okay? Alright? Everything around you is totally tied up with suffering and mental afflictions. Let's talk about those first. Okay? They are the basis. Think of them as the basis. The whole mind-only school is based or founded upon shenwangs, changing things. Okay? What can you say about those changing things? Oh, I think about them in certain ways. I guntakize them. Okay? I think about them in certain ways. What are the two ways I think about them? Well, there's two flavors of guntaks. Here's one.
Say, ngowola, guntape, gunta. Ngowola, guntape, gunta.
I'm giving you two ways that you guntakize things. Okay? Two ways that you imagine things, two ways that you construct about things, two ways that you create your mental images about things. And the first one is called ngola kuntape kunta. Ngo means the essence of an object. Okay? Ngo means the essence of an object. Ngola kuntape kunta means a kuntak which is kuntaked about the essence of a thing. Meaning what? A construct that you construct about the essence of a thing. The construct that you construct about the essence of a thing. What's an example? Pen. That's all. Okay? Pen. Okay. What's the famous one from Bendigo, Australia? Car. Okay, car. We had these guys go around saying car for 10 days. They were sitting in front of the campfire out in Bendigo, Australia. Car. Car. Okay. Car. Car is a concept about the essence of that thing. Okay? Pen. Pen. The construct pen. Call it a verbalization if you are a Dajangi Kebu, if you know the words for things. Call it a mental construct if you don't, or maybe you do both. Okay? You think of it as a pen. That's a construct. Okay? Thinking of it as a pen is a construct. Okay? That's about the essence of the pen. Now you know what's coming next. What? What would be the second kind of kuntak? If the basic one is to think pen, what would be the second one? Huh? The first one, they're both labels. The first one is labeling it about its basic nature. And then what would the second one be? It's various qualities. Blue, long, sharp. Okay? What? Here's the second one.
Say Kepala. Kundape. Kunda. Kepala. Kundape. Kunda. Okay. Kepa means the details of an object, the features of an object. Long, blue, white, sharp, shiny. Okay? And those are also just when you think to yourself, the pen is shiny, or the pen is blue, or the pen is white, you're making a new construct. The boy is Tashi. Tashi the boy is chubby. Okay? This is now a feature or a detail. In each case, you are making a new construct. Okay? You can either construct about the basic object, pen, or you can construct about features of the basic object, meaning long, blue, shiny, okay, pen. Yeah? We're talking about ideas and words, okay? Either or both, okay? You think of it as a pen and you hear the word pen in your mind, like that. You call it a pen and you can and you visualize it as a pen, or you conceptualize it as a pen.
So here, can I make that distinction?
It could be either one or both. You know, normally they say both for a person who knows the name of the object. You are doing both at the same time. You are thinking pen and you are visualizing or conceptualizing pen in your mind. What is that as opposed to the word? It's a perfect mental image of the thing as a pen, okay? That you mistake for the pen. In the middle way school, is there something behind the pen? There is, but not such that if you kept looking, you wouldn't find more. You see what I mean? There's no end sense data. There's always something behind that. Okay? In the middle way school, it never ends. What's the sign in the middle way school that something does not exist by definition? When you look for the thing that you are giving the name, you find it. If anything existed like that, it would exist by definition. Is there any such thing in the middle way school? No. Is there any such thing in the mind only school? Oh God, there better be or there won't be anything. You see what I mean? Okay, you got to get used to that. One is an endless onion, peel after peel after peel after peel, and in the middle there's nothing. Okay. One is, oh yeah, you peel the first one, but there's something there. Okay? That's mind only school. You got to get used to that. Okay? Yeah. He says, what's the difference between these two flavors of kuntak and those, I think you're talking about the dartboard as being the thing that you throw the darts at and the thing at which the darts are thrown. We're not talking about that now. We're not talking about that now. We're talking about two different ways in which you conceptualize when you perceive an object. Okay. You think of it either as tashi, or you think of it as tashi's fat, or tashi cries a lot, or tashi's, you know, likes to drink milk a lot, or something like that. You're thinking about details of Tashi. There are two ways of thinking about an object. There are two ways of constructing mental ideas about an object. Okay? Now we go back to the triangle. So there's two ways to kuntak a shenwang, right? You could either do its basic thing, which is pen. Or you could detail. Pen is blue. There's two ways you could lay your ideas on that object. Okay. Either Tashi or Tashi's chubby. Alright? One is the basic thing, thinking of it as Tashi, and one is the detail, thinking of it as Tashi, the chubby guy. Is there any other way of thinking of the pen in the mind-only school? Are there only these two? Is those the only two flavors of kuntaks you can ever have about this shenwang right here? Is there any other one you can have about it? I'll give you a clue. Is there any really wrong one you can have about it? Yeah, to think that it is the thing that we call the pen from its own side.
Okay.
Does it deserve the word pen in and of itself? Okay. Is any object deserve the word it gets in and of itself in this school? No. Okay. Kuntaks are not natural. Kuntaks are made up. Okay. They do not. They're the only one of the three groups that doesn't exist by definition. Things don't get their names from their own sides. You give them their names. To think that pen would be the thing you call pen naturally and from its own side is ignorance itself in this system, is not understanding emptiness in this system. Hey, you want to know what a mind-only school person thinks the gakcha is? What's the thing that emptiness is empty of? A pen that could get the name pen by itself. All of its own right. Okay? Not because I gave it the name pen, but because it is pen from its own side. It deserves the name pen. It should have the name pen. Okay? That in this school is ignorance. That's another flavor of kuntak. That's about the same as that pumpkin that's squashing the twin towers. Okay? You can imagine it, right? Can you imagine a pen that should be pen from its own side? Can you imagine a pen that should have been called pen by nature? You can imagine it. Does it exist? No. In this school, no. Is your boss an irritating person from his own side? Is your boss bad from his own side? First of all, is he bad?
Yes.
Yeah, he is. Don't think that Buddhism is saying your boss is not bad. Don't think Buddhism is saying that's an illusion, you can get over that, then you can walk around spaced out and happy all the time. It's not like that. He is bad. You know, anyone who says the boss is not bad, let me drill your teeth with a dental drill. Come, I've never had anyone take it. You never had anyone take up my offer. You know, if you think that Buddhism is saying these things don't exist or somehow he's not bad, of course he's bad. Why? Prove it. He makes me feel bad. That's reality. He does make me feel bad. Well, what do you mean when he says like an illusion? Well, it looks like he's being bad from his own side, but I know better. He's being bad because I'm perceiving him as bad because my old bad karma is making me see him as bad, and the stupidest thing in the world I could ever do to my bad boss is be bad to him. Because then I'd see him again. You know what I mean? You know, the Terminator, the Eliminator. How do you get rid of your bad boss? Be sweet, kind, compassionate, knowledgeable to, you know. Then you'll never see him that way again. You can change your whole reality into tantric angels all around you. They are, or are they? No, not till you see him that way. Okay? You got to get used to that. Okay? So is a pen the thing you call a pen by definition in the mind-only school? I'll say it again. Is a pen the thing you call pen from its own side? No. And to think it is ignorance. Okay? And the lack of that in the universe is called emptiness. Okay? The total lack in the universe of pens that get called pens from their own side doesn't exist in the universe. That's emptiness. Okay? So we got another kuntak here, which is what? The wrong one. Let's make it crooked, okay? This is where pen is what we call pen. From its own side. Pens is pens no matter what. Okay? Pens are what we call pen. Why? Because I made it up? No. Because they's called pens from their own side. That's ignorance in this school. Do you think that about pens? Yes. Is it correct? No. Okay? And the fact that that there doesn't exist any such thing as a pen that could get called pen because it had some God-given right to be called pen. The fact that that doesn't exist is, hey, guess what? Yongdu. Now the triangle comes together. Okay? You got to get used to that. You ready? I'll do it one more time. These poor old Shenwangs are sitting around this room. How many? Oh, about a zillion. Okay? There's Shenwangs all around you. The people around you are Shenwangs. The hairs in their noses are Shenwangs. The dandruff on their hair is Shenwangs. The chairs are Shenwangs. The school is Shenwangs. New York City is a Shenwang. Okay? Do you think of them in a correct way or a wrong way? Both. Two correct ways and one wrong way. Give me the two correct ways. Oh, I think about them as dandruff. That's correct. That's about the essence of the object. I think about it as kind of gross dandruff. That's a detail of the object. Okay? Are they correct? Yes. Okay? Do they exist that way? Yes. Can you think of them and conceptualize them that way? Yes. Can you call them that reasonably? Yes. Otherwise they wouldn't sell so much Head and Shoulders. Okay? You can think of them that way. Okay? And you're not wrong. Okay? That's not the kuntaks we're talking about. We're talking about the kuntaks that don't exist. What's the worst one? Dandruff is dandruff. Dandruff is what we call dandruff from its own side. Dandruff is always bad. Okay? No, there's never such a good thing as a good one. You know? It's bad from its own side. I hate it. You know, I don't like anybody who has that. And I don't like it when I get it. I'll spend anything not to have that. You know. Oh, the monks need food in India? It's okay, but I gotta get rid of this dandruff first, you know. Okay. Okay. You know? Okay, it's where your desire is overcoming what you know to be right. You see what I mean? Because you believe that it comes from its own, it is bad by itself, from its own side. It deserves the name bad innately. From its own side. It is always bad, and it's the most important bad, and it's more important than people not getting fed at Sarah Monastery. Okay? Like that. Okay? You believe that. Okay? That would be dandruff coming from its own side. Okay? Does such a dandruff exist? No. Okay? That doesn't exist. Okay? And the fact that that kind of dandruff doesn't exist is yongdu. Okay? You got to get used to that. Each one of the three natures of the mind-only school, each one of the three attributes of the mind-only school creates the other two. See? In other words, you can say it this way. Someone comes up to you and says, hey, what are you doing over there in that school at night? Say, I'm studying the three attributes of the mind-only school system. So, yeah, well, what's a yongdu? Oh, yongdu is the absence of certain kuntaks with certain shenwangs. Okay. Okay, got it? Okay. Somebody comes up to you and says, what's a yongdu? Yeah, it's going to happen on the street, I'm sure. Okay. Somebody comes up and says, what's a yongdu anyway? And you say, it's the fact that certain kuntaks that aren't true don't apply to all those shenwangs around you. Like what? Well, like the fact that your boss is called a bad boss from his own side. Okay? That's a kuntak that doesn't exist. And the fact that that doesn't apply to the shenwang called your boss is emptiness in the mind-only school. You see? You can say yongdu equals shenwangs minus certain kuntaks. Okay? Really. And you must start thinking like that. If you really want to understand the mind-only school, you got to think like that. Yongdu equals certain shenwangs minus the kuntaks that don't apply to them. Because some kuntaks do apply to them, right? It is a pen. It's not a pen that's called a pen from its own side. Okay. Well, how are we going to do the kuntaks? I don't know. Let's forget that. Okay. No. Kuntaks is, I don't know. Kuntaks help you understand shenwangs, and some of them don't help you understand shenwangs. You know, so some kuntaks apply to shenwangs and some don't apply to shenwangs. When they don't apply to shenwangs, you get yongdu. That's all. And that's all the Buddha is playing with you in these three. He wants you to be able to just switch them around like that. Okay? Yeah.
His third kind of kuntak, the one that don't apply to Shenwang.
Yeah.
Are they the same thing as
kakka? Exactly. Beautiful question. Okay? He said, we talked about three kinds of kuntaks. One is where you think of the pen as a pen. That's okay, no problem. One is where you think of the pen as long. No problem, it is long. I mean, okay, let's say thin or whatever, okay? But what about the third one where you think it has a God-given right to be a pen? Okay? Does that exist with this thing here? No. And that the absence of that is emptiness in this school called Yongdu. Okay? Now his question was, is a pen, which has a God-given right to be called a pen, is that gakcha in this school? Is that the thing that emptiness is empty of? Is that what it means in this school to be a self-existent thing? Yes. Good question. Okay? Very good question. Okay, gakcha means the thing that emptiness is empty of. What's our example for gakcha in this room? Two-headed, 30-foot purple elephant, which is crushing people at this moment. Okay? Oh, that's not such a good example. That never could exist anyway. Duh. Get it? Self-existent things can never exist either. Okay? They are totally crazy. Okay? They never existed, they can't exist, they never will exist, and you believe in them and they cause you all your bad karma. You believe that the boss is bad from the boss's side, and you respond to the boss, and you spin the wheel one more time. You set it in motion one more time, and you continue to suffer because you don't get it. Okay? Yeah. John said, are there things in the mind-only school that they believe to be self-existent? There are about 20 words for self-existent. Okay? There are about 20 different words in Madhyamika, in middle way, for self-existent, and they all mean the same thing. I'll give you some of them. Exist naturally. Exist from its own side. Exist by definition. Exist truly. Okay? Like that. All of those. Okay? But in the lower schools, those mean totally different things. In the lower schools, you can exist by definition and not exist in truth or like that. Okay? You can be some of them and not other ones. They don't mean exactly the same thing. In the middle way school, does anything exist by definition? No. In the mind only school, does anything exist by definition? Yeah, this pen. Okay? Yeah. Oh, so the word self-existent is a little tricky. Okay. Yeah. John said, if I say the mind-only school says this thing exists by definition, would the middle is that accurate according to the middle way school? No. Okay. Does the middle way school say that any object has some manner of existing from its own side? No. Zero. Okay. In the mind-only school, oh God, yes they do. Like what? Like my boss. Okay. In this school, to think of this pen as existing from its own side would be a very correct guntan. Yeah, you could say that. To think that the essence of it, the pen, exists from its own side, yeah, that would be a detail, I think, in this school. No. It's understanding that the kuntak, which is wrong about it, that what it believes about it is not there, is yongdu. Okay? Let's say you believe that this pen has a God-given right to be a pen. Okay? Then you are grasping in this school to something that never existed. And that is ignorance. And that causes you all your suffering. That's why you're getting old. That's why you are going to die if you don't figure it out in time. Okay? Very delicate, very important for our welfare. Yeah. It is inaccurate, yeah. Yeah. No, not at all. There are two accurate kuntaks about the pen. One that says pen. The second that says long pen. And then there's a wrong kuntak about the pen that says that pen has a God-given right to be called a pen. Okay. That one is wrong. And the object that that holds on to is what emptiness is empty of and always has been empty of and never was there in the first place. And it happens to be the one that, when you think that way, causes you all your suffering. Okay, yeah?
The paradigm to say that the thing that's wrong is thinking that the name is what is sort of naturally related to that.
She said, can you describe then the wrong kind of kundaking as thinking that the name somehow naturally belongs to the pen? Yeah, very close to that. Very close to that. Whether or not I think of it as a pen, it's a pen. Okay, he said, Dr. Ho said, what would Madhyamika say about those two correct ones? Okay? They'd say that they don't exist by definition. And they'd say, but they wouldn't describe that in the same way that the mind-only school describes it. Okay? Because in mind-only school, not existing by definition means anything which is just made up in your mind. In the mind-only school, not existing by definition means it's just made up in your mind. In the middle way school, everything is made up in your mind. Okay? Yeah. Ultimately, in middle way school, if you're not an Arya yet, you are misperceiving it all the time. Okay? You're misunderstanding it all the time. Actively misunderstanding it all the time. He said, is there no right kundak in Madhyamika school? I guess you could say that roughly. But then you'd have to get into what does an Arya see when he sees emptiness directly. Because that is correct. Okay, I got one more question for you. All right? If I think of this pen as being a pen by a God-given right, it has a God-given right to be called a pen. Okay? The pen is called a pen, and that's true in all cases, in all places, and naturally, this thing is called a pen, okay? Am I seeing something there which is not there, or am I thinking of something in a way which it is not, okay? Now, I'll give you this example again, okay? If I ask you to go into the hallway back there and see if there's any coffee tables in the hallway, and you come back and say no, right? You're talking about a kind of emptiness, all right? You're talking about the absence of something. I send you back there to see if there's a coffee table in the hallway, and you come back and say no. Then you're reporting the absence of something, okay? In Tibetan, what is that called? In Tibetan, all you Tibetan students, what's the verb for that? It is there or it is not there. There's a whole, yeah, me means it's not there. What's the opposite of me? Ye. So in Tibetan you have a verb for is or exists, ye or me. Ye means, yeah, it's there in the hallway. There is a table in the hallway. Me means, no, there is no table in the hallway. Okay. In English you say is. There isn't any. Okay. But what you mean is, it exists or it doesn't exist there. Okay. If you think about it, the English word is or is not covers that. But also there's another verb in Tibetan. What is it? It is a table, or it is not a table. Yin or min. Okay. Say yin.
Min.
Min. That spotted rope is not a real snake. Okay? That speckled rope is not a snake. Okay? That's yin or min in Tibetan. In English you use the word is. Okay, but do you get it? There is something there. But is its identity a real snake or not? It looks like a snake. It's all coiled up. I was just walking through the mountains in Arizona. They told me about Mojave rattlesnakes. They said, better to run into a diamondback. You know, they just paralyze you for a couple of days. Mojaves, there's no cure, okay? And they're like, and there's a lot of them on that mountain. See you later, you know. And so I'm like walking around the mountain. They said make lots of noise. I'm like whistling and singing, and you know, like that. Then suddenly you see this. It's dusk, and you see this thing curled up, you know. And you're not like going to ask questions. You're just going to run, right? But it's that's a question of yin or min. Is it a snake or not? Okay. Is that coiled shape a snake or not? That's yin or min. Okay? It's not a question of whether there's a coil there or not. It's not y or me. It's yin or min. And the point of this is that when you're doing the wrong kind of kuntaking, in this context, okay, in this context, really what you're doing is a yin min thing or a yin me thing? It's a yin min thing. And that's just when you get in the reading, which, by the way, you should have noticed by now that the readings are impossible. Okay? Don't get nervous, okay? I mean, people throughout the last 500 years have tried to figure out those readings. Don't worry about it. There are thousands and thousands of pages written on those words that you see there. There are thousands and thousands of pages written in different languages to explain the words of the sutra in particular. Okay? Very, very, very difficult. You cannot understand it without an oral explanation. Okay? But you will see in the reading this time that Jetsun Kapa is drawing a distinction. He says, when you think about it, the wrong kind of kuntaking is really a question of misidentifying something. You see? There is a person there. There is a pen there. Do we call it a pen? Yes. Do we give it labels as far as its features and its details? Yes. Okay? And you're just thinking of it as a pen that exists from its own side, or a pen, I'm sorry, not in this school, a pen that should be called a pen from its own side. That doesn't exist by definition. By the way, quick question. In this school, does the pen exist from its own side?
Yes.
Does the fact that the pen is called a pen exist from its own side?
No.
Great. Great. Kuntaks do not exist by definition. Shenwangs do exist by definition. Okay. Now, the tricky one. Does the fact that the pen is not called the pen from its own side, okay, exist or not?
Yes.
Yeah. Is the pen absent of exist of being called a pen from its own side?
Yes.
And that's emptiness in this school. Got it? They all support each other. I'll do it one more time. Okay? Is there a pen here? In this school?
Yes.
Does it exist from its own side?
Yes.
In this school?
Yes.
Does it exist by definition in this school?
Yes.
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 Yeah. The pen, the shenwan. Okay? Does it exist from its own side? Yes. Does it exist by definition?
Yes.
In this, mine only, okay? Forget that middle way stuff. You graduated, right? Or you got demoted, I don't know. Okay. When I think of it as a pen, am I correct? When I create a concept of it as a pen, am I correct? Yeah, that's a good kunta. When I think of it as a blue pen or a white pen, am I having a good kunta?
Yeah.
When I think of it as being the thing that's called a pen from its own side, am I correct?
No.
No. Okay. Does the fact that the pen is called the pen from its own side even exist? Careful, I'm not saying the idea, the fact. I'll say it again. Does the fact that the pen is called the pen from its own side even exist in the universe? And that's emptiness in this school. Okay? Got it? Got it? Okay? Yongdrup is the fact that the bad kundaks don't apply to this shenwang. That's Yongdrup. Okay? Yeah? Yeah.
Is that true on its own side?
Yeah, in this school, 1 plus 1 is 2. Oh, that's pretty tricky. I'd have to call it a kuntak. I'd have to say, no, it doesn't exist. Yeah, that's a concept, and it does not change. It's a kuntak. In my thinking, 1 plus 1 is 2 is a fact. And in this school, that's a kuntak. And it's an imaginary thing. No, in this school it doesn't. It's the only thing that doesn't exist from its own side. Okay? Yeah.
It's a kuntak. Yeah, all the kuntaks don't exist from their own side. He said, then the mind-only version of emptiness is that it's empty of labels. No, that's not it. The mind-only version of emptiness is that it's empty of labels that could have been applied to it naturally. Labels, the fact that it was labeled what it's labeled naturally doesn't exist, and that's emptiness. Okay. The fact that it doesn't have labels in this school is a falsity. Everything has a label. Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah. They're both kuntaks.
Same kind of.
No. I wouldn't call them the same kind of kuntaks, but they are both kuntaks.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't call them both. One is a fact. You know. One is a mathematical fact. You can say everything is labeled. Every Shenwang has its kuntak. That's all. Yeah. No, every Shenwang has a kuntak. Kuntaks don't change. Shenwangs change all the time. You weren't in the first class. Both of them are unchanging. The pen is long. It's a fact. Okay. The pen is a pen. That's a fact. Is the pen a pen from its own side? Does the pen deserve the name pen from its own side? No. Why? Because that's a kuntak. That's an imaginary thing. It doesn't exist by definition. Did you have a question?
I was just thinking that one plus one might be one thing, but one pen plus one pen might be different. Because you're talking about something that exists.
She said one plus one equals two, and one pen plus one pen.
Equals two pens.
Equals two pens. It's also a fact, and that makes it a kuntak. Sorry.
Can a Shenwang have several kuntaks?
He said, can a Shenwang have several kuntaks? They have
and
limitless kuntaks.
That would just came up when you say, is this a pen or is it a chewable object? So can there be, from one side, be the kuntak of a pen and from the other side, a kuntak of...
Okay, Axel is stuck in the middle way. Okay? he keeps one... No, and it's a natural question. He wants to know, can one Shenwang, this Shenwang here, have multiple kuntaks? Could you think of it as a pen, and could you think of it as a chewable object at the same time? And what do you think? In this school, don't forget, it exists by definition. In this school, that means what? It has its own unique identity from its own way, from its own side. It's a pen. That stupid dog is chewing on a pen. Okay? 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 Yeah.
If they believe that, then how do you become a Buddha? Because of some essence.
No, she said, if you believe that, then how could you ever become a Buddha? You see? Because in essence, you would be existing in essence, you would be existing by definition. You could not change into a Buddha. It's a beautiful question. Okay? Until you graduate to thinking about your own body and mind as something which is a construct, right? You can never become a Buddha. You is stuck in a suffering world. Until you reach Madhyamika, until you reach Nagarjuna's viewpoint, you cannot become a Buddha. Forget practicing Tantra. Okay? As long as you hold mind-only way of thinking of things, you aren't eligible to become a Buddha anymore. Because you is self-existently a suffering human samsaric being. And you could never be any different. Because you exist from your own side that way. Impossible to become a Buddha. It's exactly the middle way's complaint about the mind-only school. Hey, if you guys are right, I'm stuck here forever. I might as well have a Bud Light. You know? I'm stuck here forever. If I exist from my own side as a suffering, dying, and you believe that. Your mind-only school. You believe you have to get old and die. You really believe that. When I get up and spout about that stuff, you're like, half your mind is like, oh, there he goes again, you know, that stuff. You really believe that. You hold that to be true. You hold that to be existing. You hold death itself and the aging process to exist from its own side, mainly because you've never saw anything else. Yeah. Does the mind-only school recognize or admit that their viewpoint disqualifies them all from becoming Buddhists? No, of course not. They say, oh, you crazy middle way people, you know. According to you, nothing exists. We're going to get into that. How could I become a Buddha? I don't even exist according to you. You know? No, seriously, to hear mind-only school complain about middle way school, it's cute. It's very cute. You know, they're like, yeah, according to you, I don't have a nose, right? So I don't have to blow it anymore, right? Okay, let's see here. I think we covered everything. Okay, one last thing. It really is the last thing. I didn't have enough homework questions, so I threw in a filler question. And that was, you know, Lord Buddha, when he describes the three attributes, he has to take an example, right? He has to say, here's a real example. We've been taking dashi, but you could also do it about a pen, okay? Is this one of the five skandhas or the five heaps? Yeah. Okay, physical matter. When you talk about the five parts of a person, you're mainly talking about, number one is their physical body, right? Sukhipumbo, rupaskanda, the heap of physical matter. But you can also talk about the things in your experience, you see? Not just the things you can touch. Okay? This is part of my world as much as this is part of my world. Okay? And like that. You can roughly divide it into the five heaps that way. Okay? So Lord Buddha's been talking all this stuff about physical matter. That whole conversation tonight, the boy dashi, that blob, the noisy blob, physical matter, weighs something, okay? The pen, physical matter. And we just got through explaining how the three characteristics support each other. Where's the shenhua? In my hand, okay? What's your kuntaks about it? It's a pen. It's a long pen. It's a pen that deserves the name pen from its own sign. Two right ones and one wrong one, okay? Where's the yongdup here? The fact that that last one's not true about this pen is its emptiness. Got it? Okay, got it? So Lord Buddha has finished proving it to you about a physical object. Now what's the next place for him to go? How about the rest of the four skandhas? How about the other four heaps or parts of a person? What's number two? Your feelings. Your feelings. Feel good, feel bad. Okay, what's the third one? Discrimination. Your discrimination. Good boy, bad boy, I like her, I don't like him. Okay, what's the fourth one? All the other stuff about you, like all your other mental functions, or you. Okay, and what's the fifth one? Your consciousness. Okay, so he covers it with the other five skandhas. In the sutra, he says, hey, when I meant that, what's he talking about, by the way? Are we talking about first turning the wheel, second turning the wheel, or third turning the wheel? First. That's where he set the groundwork, right? That's where he said, hey, by the way, this is true of your physical body, this is true of your feelings, this is true of your discrimination, this is true of everything else about you, and by the way, it's also true of your mind. What? These three things. I'm talking about these three things. What? Kuntak, Shenwang, Yongdu. You can establish them with your pen, you can establish them with your hand, and you can establish them with your feelings, your discrimination, the other parts of you, and your consciousness. We just covered the five heaps. That's what I meant in the first turning of the wheel. Okay? Because that's when he brought up the five heaps in the first turning of the wheel. What else did he bring up in the first turning of the wheel? What was the first thing you ever taught? Four Arya truths, please. We threw out noble with all those, you know. Why Arya truths, by the way? First perceived directly by a person who sees emptiness directly. In the aftermath, jetobyeshi. In the hours after he sees emptiness directly, or she. That's why they're called Arya truths, okay? So he says, then he goes and proves it about the four Arya truths. The same three qualities. What? Kundak Shen Wang Yongdu. You can prove them about the four Arya truths. Almost said noble. Okay? All right.
What else can you talk to them? Oh, how about the 12 doors of sense? How about the 18 parts of the universe, the 18 divisions of the universe? How about the six elements? You see what I mean? He goes through all the subjects of his first turning of the wheel, and he proves that each one of them has kuntaks, shenwangs, and yongdrups. Every one of them has their own kuntaks, every one of them has their own shenwangs, every one of them has their own yongdrups. And each one of those forms a triangle, and each supports the other one. Okay? What is emptiness in the mind-only school? The fact that certain wrong kuntaks don't apply to certain shenwangs. That's all. Okay? So that's all. So on the, somewhere in the homework question it says, list all the things he says that these three things apply to. He says, hey, guess what? It applies to everything I ever taught in the first turning of the wheel. I went through 50 different ways to understand your world. You can divide it into five heaps. You can divide it into 18 categories. You can divide it into 12 doors of sense. You can divide it into any way you want. Six elements. It doesn't matter how you divide it. These three apply to everyone. These three apply to everyone. So he's explaining the first turning of the wheel also. That's all. That's all. He says it not only applies to one thing, it doesn't just apply to pens, it applies to everything. Okay. And again, I think it's very, very important to say that the goal of thinking about things in these three categories is that you don't get old and die. Okay. How do you get old and die? Because you don't understand that the pen is not the pen from its own side. It's not what we call pen from its own side. Okay? It's not pen naturally, and neither are all the people that you don't like. The people that you get angry at. And the people that you try to hurt. And the people that you collect bad karma about. They don't exist from their own side. You're making them who they are. It's coming from you. And the only thing you're accomplishing when you fight with them is what? You're guaranteeing that they'll come back. You're guaranteeing that you'll come back. Tantrically speaking, every time you have a single thought of a single object as existing from its own side, you have damaged your winds and your body. You are 1 minute older. It's very interesting. It's very interesting, okay? The thought of something as self-existent is killing you. Literally, okay? It's very interesting. Every time you get upset at another person slightly, you have just hurt yourself a little more. You are bringing yourself closer to death. You are causing certain physical reactions in your body that are going to kill you. It's very interesting. As the mind goes, the physical constituents go. And every time you think of something as self-existent, you are bringing yourself, you are killing yourself slowly. And the accumulation of that is that you'll have to die. It's very interesting. If you could change it and stop thinking of things this way, you would not have to die. And that's the point of Buddhism. The point of Buddhism is not to get calmer or learn to put up with your old age or learn to put up with people you don't like or be friendly to everybody or something like that. Nothing to do with that. It is to accomplish not dying. And you can do it. Mahayana motivation goes a little bit further. What? I'll learn how not to die so I can teach other people. And you speak with more authority when you've done it yourself. Okay? Yeah, you don't have to die. Prove it. Well, I did it. Well, show me. Okay, here. Here's how you do it. You know, that's all. That's Mahayana motivation. Yeah?
Is it a negative thought which causes you to age and die, or is it
a neutral self? He said, does it have to be an active negative thought like desire or anger? Or could it be just a neutral misunderstanding of your universe? A neutral misunderstanding of your universe is enough to kill you. Because in this school, in what school? In middleway school, it's a mental affliction. Okay? Just misunderstanding your world is killing you. Even if you were friendly to everybody, it would still kill you.
Okay? It's very interesting.
When I say not die, I mean this. The continued understanding of your universe. You know, to have continual knowledge about your universe and to act appropriately out of that knowledge actually changes
the physical constituents of your body so perfectly that it changes into a tantric deity. That's all. You can achieve enlightenment in one lifetime.
So that proves that continues on.
Sorry?
So that continues on.
Yeah. He said, does it continue on? Of course. Yeah. You can't go down from that state. You know, you can't like start thinking of things as self-existent again after that, because you have eliminated it. You have eliminated the seed for it.
So it's also the concept about the manifestation of dying.
Of what?
The manifestation of passing. The manifestation of dying.
Oh. Just because you see a tantric deity die doesn't mean that they saw a tantric deity die. Okay? Just because you see His Holiness the Dalai Lama getting gray doesn't mean that His Holiness the Dalai Lama sees himself getting gray. Okay? That's why you haven't seen anybody not die recently. Because it takes almost as much good karma to see it as to do it.
What's the difference between visualizing a pink elephant in the room and a tantric deity with 9 faces, 34 or 16 legs?
He says, what's the difference between visualizing a 30-foot, two-headed pink elephant running through the room and visualizing a tantric deity with 12 arms or something like that? Okay. The name for Girim in Tantra, the name for the practice of doing those visualizations is called Takpe Nyanjur. Kuntak Nyanjur. Nyanjur means yoga. Kuntak means imagining. And it is. And I can't go into detail on it because it's not appropriate in a public teaching. But the karma of certain attitudes about them makes them happen. Yeah. Yeah, I think you got to get, there's some schools, like the lower middle way school says that ignorance itself is not a mental affliction. Okay? And then the Prasangika says that ignorance itself is a mental affliction. You see what I mean? And just misunderstanding your world is enough to kill you. Yeah, it is a negative mental karma. The lower schools, like when you read the Friday night reading, it won't say that. Why? That's the Madhyamika Svatantrika school. Okay? The teaching on the wheel of life comes from there. Okay? So you got to be careful on that. One more question, then we have to stop. Or else I will project sleepiness.
But based on the lower schools, you can have a direct perception of
emptiness. Can or cannot?
Can, right? You have to.
She said, in the lower schools, can you have a direct perception of emptiness? Of course. Of course they say that. Even down to Vaibhashika, even down to the Abhidhamma schools. But do they mean the same thing by emptiness? Not at all. Not at all. Okay? Not at all.
But they must mean something different.
That's what makes the schools different, actually. That's one of the biggest things that makes
the
school.
How can you have a direct perception of something that doesn't exist,
though? Oh, so she said, how can you have a direct perception of something that doesn't exist? This is a very tricky subject. If you ever see emptiness directly, even if you think you're an Abhidharma person, you are automatically Madhyamika Prasangika. Okay, you got to get used to that.
But up until that point, you're Abhidharma.
You could think you're Abhidharma, but you're not. Okay. Now, would a person in the mindset of the Abhidharma school be likely to see emptiness directly? Not at all. You know, you have to start thinking Madhyamika Prasangika thoughts before you can see emptiness directly. You have to. Okay. You might not understand that you're doing it, but you are. Okay.
Yeah. I thought we had a bodhisattva about it when you were
in Tibet. Oh. It's a question in my reach. She says, I thought we had a bodhisattva vow that said, we're not supposed to say that Hinayana people can't see emptiness directly. You do have a bodhisattva vow that you're not supposed to say that Hinayana people can't see emptiness directly, because Hinayana people can see emptiness directly. But at that point, Hinayana refers to their motivation and not to their philosophical school.
Okay.
You have to be very clear on that. And Geshe Thubten covered that in the tapes. Okay. All right. We'll do a prayer.
This is the end of Class 4. You have been listening to What the Buddha Really Meant with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.